ethical issues that are raised by artificial intelligence, whatever they are, right? And try to mitigate them, try to solve the issue, try to find a way to make sure that AI is more beneficial than it might be, you know, problematic. The biggest ethical issue today is the narrative. The problem that we have today is that we are surrounded by a narrative, by a discourse about AI ethics, with people that do not always know what they're talking about. We are all biased. So biases are part of the way we deal with the world out there. So if we remove biases, we are creating something that is not real. Each time you see something or you listen to something and you're told something, do not take it for granted. Do not take it as information. Take it as a data, right? And then you put it on your data set. And at some point, you can use it to make inferences and to transform all those data into useful data.
Welcome to the Regulating AI podcast. Join host Sanjay Puri as he explores the dynamic and developing world of artificial intelligence governance. Each episode features deep dives with global leaders at the forefront of regulating AI responsibly, tackling the challenges using AI can bring about head-on and enabling balance without hindering innovation.
Welcome to the Regulating AI podcast. Artificial intelligence, AI, stands at the forefront of technological evolution, with experts predicting that it could add trillions of dollars to our GDP, but it could also have a major impact on our workforce, national security, and many other things. So how do we regulate it without stifling innovation? Our podcast features insights from various perspectives, industry leaders, to government officials, to advocacy groups, to civil society leaders, academic institution leaders. Together, they address pivotal questions that are needed to create fair, practical legislation. I'm very excited to have Dr. Emmanuel Coffey with us today. He's an AI ethicist. He's also a professor and researcher at ICEP, which is the Paris Institute of Digital Technology. He's also an ethics Sherpa. I invited him on this show as it is very important to get different perspectives towards framing AI legislation. And I wanted to get a perspective related to AI ethics, especially a global perspective. Welcome, Dr. Coffey. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the Regulating AI podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Emmanuel, we have a large global audience, which is, you know, very diverse. It's made up of policymakers. It's made up of think tank experts. It's made up of CEOs of AI companies, practitioners. So for all of them, can you first start by defining what you mean by ethics? Because for non-experts, there's a lot of confusion. We've had a lot of AI ethics on the show, and there are a lot of AI ethics now. There's an AI ethics 100, AI ethics 500. So just to start the conversation, can you frame it for our listeners, please?
Yeah, sure. That it's a really good starting point, I guess, to just put things on the table. Lots of people actually are self-labeling as AI ethicist or doing AI ethics. The first thing that I want to say is that I'm not talking about AI ethics. I prefer talking about ethics applied to artificial intelligence. So when we're doing that, when I'm doing that, actually, I'm just trying to apply ethical thinking to this technical object that is artificial intelligence. So there is obviously a big issue about how we can define what AI is and what it is not. So I will not dive into that. It's too techie. But when I'm talking about ethics, I always try to remind people that ethics is about philosophy. Lots of people that are doing ethics today are lawyers, and they're politicians, they're communicants, that they're not really specialized or not expert in philosophy. The point with ethics applied to artificial intelligence is it's not philosophy for the sake of philosophy. The big difficulty that we have as AI ethicists is to take all those philosophical thought, theories, and background and to use that for really practical needs that are the needs of big companies or organizations that might be public and private organizations. So the point is to identify the, let's say, ethical issues that are raised by artificial intelligence, whatever they are, right? And try to mitigate them, try to solve the issue, try to find a way to make sure that AI is more beneficial than it might be, you know, problematic.
Well, that's very, very helpful for our audience. So since you have set the table for defining it, in your view, what are the key ethical issues for intelligence as you see it for our audience?
There are two answers to that. The first one might be just look around and read the internet, and you find lots of things about the impact on the environment, existential risk, the impact on employment, this kind of thing. So these are the major problems as they are seen or perceived by most people that are working in the field. My take would be just to withdraw from all that, what I call ethical noise, because if you really dive into all of these issues, we can see that they're not always issues per se. My take would be that the biggest ethical issue today is the narrative, the discourse, the discussion that we have around that. And you've asked really relevantly, what does that mean? What AI ethics means? And that's the question that not that many people are asking themselves, actually. And the problem that we have today is that we are surrounded by a narrative, by a discourse about AI ethics, with people that do not always know what they're talking about, people that do not have the same definition of what is ethics, what is artificial intelligence, what is the ontology, and these kind of things. And this is the big issue that we have now, because, you know, I like philosophy, obviously, and when you go back to ancient Greece, you get the sophists. The sophists were people that were selling away our discourse in order to influence others, not to find the truth, which was the final goal of philosophy, like Socrates. But obviously, those people, the sophists, they were just selling for money some kind of discourse that might influence others, right? And we are exactly in the same position now with all those words that people are just taking. They are just reselling without even thinking about what's behind all those words, what is really the meaning of all those words. So we are really, I guess, we are now struggling in this huge narrative. And obviously, lots of people are highly influenced by this narrative, which is, I guess, a bit problematic. And this is one of the reason that we have this polarized situation where you get people that are technophiles and people that are technophobes that are fighting each other, just saying, okay, AI is the you know, the solution for all our problems. And on the other hand, people that might say, okay, it's actually an existential risk. So this is where we have a big issue, because if we have this polarization, if we have this narrative that is not really clear, if we have all those actors that are using those words without really trying to define them, we cannot really analyze correctly the situation. We cannot find solutions to the problems that we're facing.
So that leads me to two questions, Dr. Ghafi, for our audiences. As you said, there are a lot of people who are talking about AI ethics. And I talk to leaders of companies, etc., who have set up AI ethics boards. They've set up ethics committees. How can, is there a way for them to figure out what kind of experts that they should have? Is there some kind of a standardization like you have for accountants, lawyers? You know, you pass a bar, you pass an accounting exam or for medical exam. Is there something for AI ethics that kind of is a certification that we can say, okay, this is the real deal?
Not yet. And that's definitely a big issue that we have. We're trying to fix that here in Europe. We created an association of AI ethicists. We're trying to make sure that those people, they have the sufficient background, because it's not only about doing philosophy. It's also about mastering some kind of technologies. So it's also about mastering the environment, business environment. It's also about knowing about the laws, this kind of thing. So it's really a wide range of knowledge that are needed. So for now, there is no such thing as a standard to say, okay, you're an AI ethicist. My take would be to say, at least try to make sure that you have someone that has the sufficient background, that have worked with industries, that has the knowledge in philosophy. That's key. That's really key. And I'm really insisting on that, because most ethicists today are lawyers or they are computer scientists. There's a big international companies that has been hiring AI ethicists, and in the position form, they were asking for, you know, computer scientist background, which is to me totally nonsensical, right? So at least make sure that you have people that have the background in philosophy, that are used to work with companies, because the problem when you're looking for people that have the background in philosophy is that you will find philosophers, right? Mm-hmm. And philosophers are really good at teaching. They're not really good at working with businesses. So you also need to have this ability to bridge the gap between the philosophical theories and the practical needs of organizations.
So have a philosophy background, but someone who's has that background and has worked with businesses, I think is what you're saying. For our listeners, when you're hiring an AI ethics ethicist, please keep that in mind. There is no certification yet. Dr. Goffey said Europe is working on that. Europe is always ahead in terms of setting standards. Coming to the second question I have, Dr. Goffey, is in your view, what core principles should be embedded in AI systems from an ethics standpoint? Are there some core principles in your view?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. Actually, the question, which is totally legitimate, is housed at the really high level of abstraction. So what I'm doing when I'm working with companies, the first thing that I try to make them understand is that you cannot address this kind of issue if you do not know your use cases. So start with your use cases. What are the use cases in your company? And once you identify that, you get the list, then you can identify also the impacts, positive and negative impacts of those specific use cases in your specific situation. And then you can see what are the problems that you will have to address. So for the negative impact, you can mitigate them. You can just try to avoid them. For the positive impact, you can try to build on them to make sure that you are adding value to your activities, right? So the point is that there is no such thing as core values, core principles. It's all about a very specific context. And that's a really important point, I would say. It's to me the difference between morals and ethics. Morals is made of those big norms that are out there, applicable right to everyone in a in a big community. Ethics is a decision that you're making in a very specific situation. Ethics is really highly contextual. So you have to know the context, you have to know the use cases, you have to know what kind of application that you're using and what are the impacts. So this is the starting point. And then you can build on that.
Well, that's a very important point you have made. You're saying that there's a difference between morals and ethics. Ethics really depends on the use case of each system, each company, etc. Dr. Goffey, in my conversations with C-level leaders at companies who are large Fortune 500 companies who are implementing AI ethics, and I want your view, most of them have ethics boards, but they're all people brought in from internal, they brought in somebody from HR, from somebody from legal, somebody from finance, etc. What is your view? Should an ethics board in these large companies should be internal, or should they have some external people also?
I think that it's always better in this kind of situation to have someone that is external. Obviously, when you're internal, when you're an employee of the company, you have strong pressure and you cannot tell whatever you want, right? So you will always have to make compromises about the risk that you're taking to say out loud things that might unplease your boss. So my advice would be, whenever you can, try to have someone that is external to the company that is able to, as I'm doing myself, just to tell the truth, right? We call that the parrhesia. It's a philosophical sense saying, okay, I will tell you whatever I have to tell you, whatever it takes, right? And even if it does not please you, that's not the point. You have to know about the reality of what is happening. I've seen that myself many, many times in companies where people, they have this pressure and they know the problems, they identify the problems, but they don't want to raise the flag and tell the boss, okay, look, we are facing a situation now, right? They just try to protect themselves. They just try to protect their position, which is fair, but that might be counterproductive for the company on the long run.
No, so I think you're making a very important point for our listeners who are setting up ethics boards in their companies. What he's saying is, have a mix of internal and external just to keep things, to give you a real independent perspective like you have in your corporate board. You have your CEO on the board, maybe you have a CFO, but you have people outside on your audit committee, on this committee. Same thing should be there on the ethics board. I think, Dr. Goffey, you're making a very important point. Dr. Goffey, shifting a little bit, in your view, what kind of educational initiatives would best spread awareness of AI ethics issues? You are, besides being an ethics sherpa and ethics leader, you're also an educator. So talk a little bit, you know, because there is so much now about AI ethics on the internet, but how do you kind of use education initiatives to, you know, spread awareness of AI ethics issues?
I I really foster discussion and deliberation and debate. That's I think that it is key. As a professor, I do not tell or I do not provide any kind of truce about what's acceptable and what is not acceptable in terms of ethics applied to artificial intelligence. I'm just trying to raise awareness that there might be issue and help people to identify their own problems and their own solution. It's called, I don't know if you like philosophy, it's called meiotic, which is how to make people, you know, give birth to their own perspective in ethics. So I'm not a moralist. I'm not here to say what is right and what is wrong, but it's all about discussion. So you can take use cases. When I'm working, I'm facing lots of use cases that are really interesting. So I bring that to the table and I discuss with, you know, the students that might be really young people, maybe older people, and just trying to tell them, okay, what would you do in this kind of situation? And then once you start doing that, you can bring slowly concepts and notions that are ethics concepts or ethics notions, right? Just to enlighten the discussion, or also to raise awareness about the fact that, for example, when I'm working in France, in Europe, you might have different perspective coming from other countries, other places, other cultures, right? And this is something that is really interesting because here in the Western world, I would say Europe and Northern America, people are not always aware that in other places, perspective might be totally different. And sometimes we think because, and especially us in France, we think that we hold any kind of truth because we are the heirs of the Enlightenment. But that's not the case, definitely not the case, right? the biggest part of the world is in Africa, is in the Indian continent and in China. So it's definitely not us, right? So we do not hold any kind of universal truth. And sometimes I'm just trying to bring that both to my students, but also when I'm working with companies. I'm doing a mission currently with a real estate company that is operating worldwide, and I'm trying just to tell them, okay, look, your values or principles, they might be really legitimate in France, in Europe, in Northern America, but if you go to Africa, if you go to India, if you go to China, if you go to Saudi Arabia, that might not work, right? So you will have to adjust that and to understand that the cultural setting will be different.
So you have raised a very important point that I want to kind of delve a little bit deeper is you talked about cultural value systems. How do you think different cultural value systems would shape policies for governing AI globally? Because, the big discussion debate, at least that we have in many cases on our podcast from guests around the world is AI is becoming a Silicon Valley, Western, English-based system, and that's a big fear. It's not just countries in Africa, India, etc., but there are smaller countries even in Europe, right. Finland and others who have their languages, etc. But let's just talk about how do different culture value systems shape policies for governing AI systems globally, Dr. Ghafi?
I would say, if I'm a bit cynical, I would say that it's impossible, right? Because I've done international relations, political science. I know how it works at the diplomatic level. Obviously, you get big powers that want to remain big powers, right? And they will try to do whatever it takes to make sure that other powers will just follow the rules. The problem that we have today is that if we really want to have this kind of global regulation, which I don't believe in, to be totally frank with you, we should need to learn to listen to others and stop thinking that we hold any kind of truths. That's key. Listening is definitely key. And to my knowledge, which is a limited knowledge, I admit that, I've never seen that much. Actually, us, the Western world, we're lecturing the rest of the world, saying, okay, this is acceptable, this is not, this is desirable, this is not desirable, without really taking into account the specificity of the culture of the people that we're talking to, right? Which is an ethical issue per se, because it's a denial of the diversity of cultural perspective in ethics, which is definitely a problem. So unless we learn to listen to others, unless we accept that we are not at the center of the world, unless we accept that other people might have different perspective and that we have to respect that, we will not be able to have a global governance system. At best, I would say we might have a really superficial governance system, right, that will work in some cases that would not be efficient at all, because there will be lots of gray areas in which lots of actors will definitely go. So the problem is that we will suddenly have kind of some kind of a rule of global governance, but it will not work. And my guess is also that lots of cultures, that might be countries, small countries, biggest countries, or even cultural areas, might feel like they are suffering from this kind of cultural tyranny, and we also might have new tensions between, you know, cultural groups saying that we don't want to see your Western values entering into our own, you know, set of values. So we really have to learn how to listen to others and to find compromise. I mean, real compromises, not compromises that are imposed by one side to other sides.
No, I think so. Making an important point is that we need to listen, and we need to accept the fact that maybe we are not the center of the dialogue or the world, and start making compromises. Dr. Goffi, you're in France. The EU just passed its Comprehensive AI Act, the first of its kind. Do you think they're addressing some of the EU AI Act is addressing some of the things that you're concerned about, from it, whether it's from an ethics, cultural standpoint?
Not at all. I would say that I'm really critical against the EU legislation. The AI Act per se is not about ethics at all. It is based on the trustworthy AI guidelines that are based on some ethical stances that are really, I would say, biased. This is a big issue that we have here. That is lacking clear definition of all the requirements and ethical principles that are inside the document. So it's really, really superficial, and it will not work. Plus, the problem with any kind of regulation that is dealing with artificial intelligence or this kind of technology is that it will not work really long, because technology is moving really fast, obviously. Societal expectations are moving really fast. So this legislation is better than nothing, I would say, but it's definitely not the right solution. And I think that we will quite soon see the limits of this, and especially when it comes to balancing innovation and ethical or normative constraints, which is already the case, right? And the point is that if we, the European Union, if we really want to get our lion's share of artificial intelligence, at some point we'll just have to remove those constraints, because obviously lots of other countries are less constrained. They will move really fast, and I feel like in this big competitive world we will lose.
So you're not as optimistic about the EU AI Act. Dr. Goffi, one of the questions that came up for you from our listeners is that, is it possible to create an unbiased and truly fair data set and AI system?
I would, if you don't mind, offer to rephrase the question. Okay. I would ask myself, is it something desirable to remove biases? That's the big question, right? Because when we're talking about biases, it's a really complex question. There are more than 180 cognitive biases. Mm-hmm. You also have algorithmic biases. You have scientific biases. So you get a lot of biases. For example, you get the optimism bias. Is it something that we have to deal with? Certainly not. So the point is that, what kind of bias do we want to mitigate? What kind of bias do we want to address? The second point is, if we consider that AI is here to mimic or to duplicate human behaviors and human minds, I would say we are all biased. Whatever we think about it, right? We are all biased. So biases are part of the way we deal with the world out there. So if we remove biases, we are creating something that is not real, right? Mm-hmm. We are actually, this is really Western-oriented perspective, we're trying to create something that looks like the perfect world as we see it, a world that is freed from any kind of bias. But the beauty of the world where we live is, where we live in, even if sometimes it might be problematic, is that we are imperfect beings, right? Mm-hmm. It's in the imperfection of the world that makes it really interesting. So my question is it really something desirable? Is something really acceptable to say, okay, we'll remove all the biases? Plus, and once again, biases are really contextual. For example, when you're discriminating between genders or discriminating between skin colors, it might be totally unacceptable in the US, in Canada, in France, and other places, but it's totally acceptable and even desirable in other places, mm-hmm. right? Because the color of your skin might give some tips about what kind of tribes you belong to, what kind of population you're in, etc. And even, you know, discrimination between gender, if you talk to the Muslim world, it's something that is part of the culture. You might disagree with that, that's not the point, but at least we have, and this is all about listening, we have to accept that some people might think differently than us, right? So the question is, how can we address biases at a really high level of abstraction, knowing that there is behind that a really wide diversity of perspective on what is acceptable and what is not?
No, so as you said, it's the question should really be a little different. Just to take that ahead a little bit from what your discussion is, you know, how can historically marginalized communities equitably participate and benefit from advances in AI, Emmanuel?
Once again, I would say first, and this is something that I've told to mostly friends in Africa. I've told them, okay, stop listening to the European world, stop listening to the Western world, stop accepting to submit yourself to European and Western perspective. It's easy to say, it's less easy to do, obviously, but. I think that, for example, looking at Africa, but also at the LATAM region in Brazil, for example, I would say, okay, free yourself from the perspective that is brought to you, that is sold to you by the Western world. Try to have your own perspective with your own values. Start with your own values. When I see, you know, once again, when I see Muslim countries that are trying to implement non-discrimination between genders in their own, and this is the case, I've seen that in some ethics codes in the Emirates, I would say that that's totally nonsensical. It's something that you're taking, you're copy-pasting from the Western world, but that does not fit your expectation, that does not fit your cultural needs. So start with who you are, what are your values, and based on that, you will be able to establish your own principles. Then you will have your own normative framework. And then you will be able to innovate in this specific framework, right? But I would say, okay, free yourself from the discourse that has been sold to you by outsiders, I would say.
Mm-hmm. So free yourself from the discourse of outsiders, Dr. Garfield. Emmanuel, what can we learn? Are there other ethics disasters and other technologies that we can learn from to prevent AI harms?
I don't think that we can compare AI to any kind of other technology. I've had this discussion with a diplomat who was comparing the AI problems that we might have today with, you know, nuclear issues. That's mm-hmm. not the same at all, right? Mm-hmm. So comparison is not always reason. So I would say what we can learn is that we still learn things like we do not know about them. I think that lots of issues that we're facing today with technologies like AI are things that have already been dealt with by philosophers already in ancient Greece, right? Mm-hmm. So my point is that instead of just try to reinvent the wheel all the time, just try to see how people were dealing with the big issue. Not making comparison between different technologies, but about the methods then you have to use in order to deal with those technology, which is basically deliberation, discussion, debate. We are now in a society, and we are now in societies, I would say, where we are lacking time for discussion. So we are making our opinion based on what we hear in the news, what we read in the newspapers, but we do not think by ourselves, and that's the big issue that we are facing today. And we need to move back to this. Taking some time to deliberate, to discuss with others, to listen to others, to make our own conviction, not opinions, right? And just to have our own ideas about what is going on, right, on this issue. So this is more about the methodology than about the technology per se.
Mm-hmm. So it's more methodology than technology. Emmanuel, if an AI system causes harm, who should be liable? The developer of the system, the deployer, or the user, or should it be all of them? I mean, that's a big question that is looming up, and the lawyers are salivating at all of that. So yeah. I wanted to get a perspective from an AI ethics expert.
Yes. Once again, humbly, I would say that if you, and that's the way the question is asked mostly, if you ask the question that way, you won't have any kind of answer, obviously. And this is, I've been working in this field for years now. I started in the military working on lethal autonomous weapons, and we had exactly the same question that was raised at the very beginning of the, it was 2004, 2005, something like that in France. There is no answer to that, because actually the way it works is that when you do something bad, right, you will go on a trial, right? And you get the people that will try to see why you did that, what was your level of knowledge, what were the ability that you had to change things, who was part of this, you know, the hierarchy chain, if there is a hierarchy chain. And actually, you do not put the responsibility a priori. Mm-hmm. You try to evaluate the responsibility a posteriori, after something happens, right? So you get to you get to really study the case, like for any kind of trial. You will just try to study the situation. You will see who were the people that were involved, what were their responsibilities, and then you will attribute responsibilities to those people. You don't do that before something happened. You did that once it happened, right? You can it happens in most companies, say, okay, this is the let's say the limits of your responsibility in terms of what you have to do and the way you have to behave in a specific situation. But that doesn't mean that you will be responsible for something specific if something bad happens. If something bad happens, then and only then you can attribute responsibilities. If you do the way around, it will not work and you will not have any kind of answer. I remember clearly, to give you an illustration of that, working on lethal autonomous weapons and drones specifically, lots of people were saying, okay, it's the guy who is, you know, pulling the trigger that is responsible. And I said, no, because the guy was in this cubicle in Nevada, operating a drone that is flying over the tribal zone in Afghanistan. He has a hierarchical chain, right? Mm-hmm. He has a boss who made a decision about what is acceptable, what is not. He has a legal advisor who told him, yes, you can or not, you cannot, right? So you cannot just put all the responsibility on the shoulder of one person. That's not the way it works. So if something bad happens, then just take the big picture and try to see who was responsible for what.
So if something bad happens, just see who is responsible, and after it happens. Taking that a little forward, Emmanuel, should certain AI applications be banned based on ethical concerns?
I think in specific contexts, yes. Yes, you have, depending on your values and what you believe in, they might have some, for example, I would say that in France, facial recognition is mm-hmm. banned and should remain banned. But at the same time, because we are entering slowly in the Olympics, we've seen that even when you try to ban this kind of, facial recognition, at some point you need it for security reason. So yes, but you always have to accept that you will have to make compromises about your values. Maybe something that is really strongly important for you today might be less important tomorrow, because the situation will change. And obviously, if you're threatened by an actor, you would reconsider maybe having this facial recognition system that might help you to make sure that people are safe when they're just, wandering in Paris. But I guess, yes, depending on your values, you have to be able to say, okay, this is not something that is aligned with what I believe in, so I will reject it. But it's not that easy, because technology is really pervading all around the world, and there is no limit to technology. Sometimes technology that have been developed in another country will enter in your country, and maybe that will that will hurt your values. So it's not that easy to do.
But since you brought up the Olympics, there's also an election coming up in France. We have an election coming up in the US, and there's one in UK. We've just had some big elections that happened recently in India and others. There's a concern about deep fakes and the use of deep fakes in AI. Maybe It might happen in France, etc. Any thoughts from you on this issue, Emmanuel?
I'm pretty concerned about that because definitely, you know, and it's due. Deepfakes will be even more important because of a generative AI system that have been developed, right? And because those systems, they are blurring the frontier between reality and virtuality, and now we can see lots of pictures, and we can read lots of things that are not really real; they are fake without knowing they are fake. So the problem is that most of us, we have to learn to consider that what we consider as information is only data. My thought is just go back to artificial intelligence and think about your brain as a data set. And each time you see something or you listen to something and you're told something, do not take it for granted. Do not take it as information. Take it as a data, right? And then you put it on your data set. And at some point, you can use it to make inferences and to transform all those data into useful data, which is information, right? But most of us, what we're doing when we're watching the news, for example, listening to others, we think that people are saying the truth. So we take it as a piece of information and then we repeat it as a piece of information. So the problem is that we do no longer analyze what we are saying and what we are using in our discourses. So my advice would be, okay, just step back from what you see, what you hear, and try to be as critical as possible, not in the wrong way, not critical for the sake of being critical, but just critical thinking is key. Just look at things and try to see, okay, who is saying that, for what reason, what is behind. Just try to find other information about the same subject and make your own conviction.
Some of our guests have, some members of Congress have come in and basically said that we should assume everything is a deep fake unless we know for sure. Now, that's a pretty unique viewpoint. Any thoughts on that?
I would say first it's impossible, and then we would just turn crazy if we do that, right? Because we would not believe in anything around, right?
Yeah.
So we cannot do that. We cannot be in a situation of doubt all the time. That's not the way it works. We need to trust others. We need to trust what we are seeing, because if we don't, at some point we will have to face some big mental issues. So. Just once again, be critical about things that are important. There are basic things you don't care if they're fake or not. But, and especially when you're talking about a subject, when you're asked about something that is important, just try to ask yourself, am I really legitimate talking about this subject? Do I have the sufficient knowledge? Or am I just repeating what I've heard somewhere else, which might be a problem?
Yeah. So do critical thinking.
Yes.
And view from that. Emmanuel, towards the end, we have a lightning round of questions. It's a little fun, a little bit putting you on the spot, but our listeners love it. So we're going to ask you some questions and hopefully ask you to pick. So are you ready for it?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay. So let's start with the first one. Innovation or regulation?
Innovation.
AI ethics or AI efficiency?
AI ethics.
Transparency or privacy?
Transparency.
Okay. Algorithmic bias or data bias?
No bias.
Okay, good. National AI policies or international AI frameworks?
Oh, national policies.
National policies, okay. Yeah. Ethical AI boards or government regulations?
Government regulations.
Okay. Local regulations or global standards?
Local, definitely.
Security or accessibility?
Security.
Okay. Fairness in AI or accuracy in AI?
Huh, that's a tricky question. I would say accuracy.
Okay. and we'll make this the last one. You've been a great, I love it. Future-proof regulations or adaptable regulations?
Adaptable.
Wonderful. Awesome. You've been a great, great, you win a lot of awards because some people duck these questions.
Okay.
Really, really love it. Emmanuel, I had a bunch of other questions. We could have gone on forever, but really on behalf of the entire Regulating AI team, I want to really express my gratitude to you, Emmanuel, for joining us and providing us such a wealth of knowledge and expertise. Your, commitment to ensuring that AI technology is developed and deployed responsibly is really commendable. And to our listeners, I hope you've enjoyed this conversation, which has shed light on a complex challenge as he talked about how to figure out what is ethics, who are the right persons in ethics, how to get an international viewpoint, the challenges that we face, and to keep regulations nimble. So until next time, we'll keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep advocating for a future where AI remains a tool for progress and prosperity. So thank you to our listeners, and thank you, Emmanuel. A fantastic show. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It was a real pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.